It's 3 a.m. in Tampa, Florida. Jeffrey Heim is throwing up for the second night in a row. It's from stress. A week ago, the 25-year-old had his head inside of an alligator's jaws while diving for fossilized shark teeth. The alligator attack is not the stress that's causing him to vomit. People are saying that Jeffrey provoked the attack and are sending Jeffrey death threats. Jeffrey claims he's innocent and the camera attached to his snorkel mask can prove it, except the alligator tore that off with a large piece of his head a week ago. There are now multiple fossil hunters and others diving the murky Miaka River for a more modern treasure, Jeffrey's camera. Find out what really happened right here at the Teeth Podcast.
A shredded wetsuit tells the tale of a close encounter with an alligator.
25-year-old Jeffrey Heim was in the Miaka River on Sunday looking for megalodon teeth.
You are listening to the Teeth Podcast, wild animal attack stories directly from the survivors. I am Jeremy Carberry, a kayak guide, wilderness first responder, the survivor of a few attacks myself, and your host.
It was crazy, man. I remember at one point I was like, I just wanted to end. It really, there's not much to prepare you for that, especially if you've never been in a situation like that. I wish I had some guidance, or like, I was asking like for a manager or something at that point, because there's just so much to deal with, especially while recovering from head trauma. In the beginning, it was fine and all positive, but like with that much attention, there's bound to be some people who, you know, really dig in and try to find the worst in an already bad situation. To set the stage for this, there were videos of me that I put on my own account from the year prior of me, yes, messing with a gator, which I should not have done. I was looking for shark teeth, and there was this gator that was not scared of me. So I was on land, and I just touched it a couple times, and it snapped at me, and I was too comfortable. And technically, that's illegal, which I completely understand now, because it can change their behavior and result in more dangerous wild animals and so forth. But yeah, I just put it up because I thought it was cool.
How old are you at this when you did this?
It was a year prior, so I was 24.
Okay.
Now, in hindsight, I would have never done that, but I didn't even know it was illegal. I was just, it's not smart to mess with wild animals.
First, though, tonight, a local story that has caught the nation's attention. We caught back up with a man who survived a gator attack in the Miaka River. The 25-year-old was out diving for shark teeth when it happened.
I was saying yes to every interview. Yeah. I was like, sure. I think, you know, this is a crazy situation and you guys seem to be interested, and I don't mind sharing my story. I like sharing my story. And this one reporter, I told him what I'm telling you now after we rescheduled a couple times because I had very intense headaches. And finally, when I'm a little bit more pain-free for the interview, I tell him all this. And he's like, you know what? Let me call you back in an hour. I said, okay. He calls me back an hour, ready to go, aggressive interrogation style questions that I was not ready for. And it was very intense, and I was very surprised. And he was rapid fire, a professional doing what he does. And I was just, you know, there with a black eye and swollen head and stitches, staples, just doing my best to like damage control, and about something that didn't happen. He was insinuating I provoked the attack. There's no proof to disprove it. I was like, look, man, there's people out there searching for my GoPro. I really want them to find this because it will prove that this is unprovoked. I feel like I didn't do anything wrong in this case. Yeah, that old video, I understand now that's wrong and I shouldn't have done that. But this is different. I was very nervous about how he's portraying me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they can take stuff and run with it.
Yeah.
In the media, and they can make things seem like they're not, especially with how he worded the questions and set me up for failure, pretty much. I'm very stressed out. I was puking at 3 a.m. those nights just because of the negative press, like people reporting my GoFundMe and people sending me terrible things about wishing that the gator should have chopped down harder and so forth. That was very difficult for me emotionally. And then I start saying no to interviews and stuff. Like, I don't know what's going on. It's just me trying to figure this out as I'm trying to heal.
Yeah.
And going through this anxiety of, you know, I'm about to be a villain here. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, your mental health completely affects your physical health, right, which is not doing so great right now.
It's not what I needed at that time.
Chronologically, we're going to jump around a bit to get the proper context of what exactly happened when that alligator closed its jaws onto and into Jeffrey's head in the Mayaka River in May 2021. I've been following this story since the attack happened and was fortunate enough to get a hold of Jeffrey in December of 2021, 6 months after the attack. He invited me to his place in Tampa, Florida. He was very friendly and looked a lot better than he did in the interviews I saw from 6 months ago. His head was no longer swollen, and he had healed up a lot, but along the side of his head, just above his ear, where his hair was short, an unbelievably massive scar was still visible. Once I got set up and started recording, I was on a mission to find out why Jeffrey was in the murky water with that alligator in the first place.
When I was little, I had a huge fascination with dinosaurs and fossils, but I was never able to find anything. If I had known about megalodon sharks when I was little, I would definitely be fascinated with them.
He had a tackle box full of shark teeth he wanted to show me, and right away, I could tell that he is very focused and passionate about the fossilized teeth that he has dedicated his life to finding and using to conserve modern-day sharks.
Preservation, great serrations, the root is perfect. The burlet, which is the little black part in between the root and the blade, is like a painting. It's beautiful silver blade with some depth to it, and then black burlet and a gray, perfect root.
It feels like porcelain.
Oh, yeah. It's very
and
smooth, shiny.
All the little serrated edges are all preserved in there. That is incredible. I don't think I've ever held a megalodon tooth. Yeah,
there's some power to it, man.
This is really cool.
There's different sizes of megalodon teeth. Each position in the mouth is a little bit different shape.
Okay. In size.
Yep.
Okay.
This was one of the Mayaka ones. It's got some oranges and reds to it. It's got orange blade, red burlet, which is really cool, and a red root.
What gives it that color?
Just the minerals it was fossilized around dictate the color of the tooth. So there's so many different colors and patterns on the blade, on the root, and on the burlet. It can really change from tooth to tooth. That's why they're like
amazing.
A snowflake, too. Not only their shape can be different, their quality can be different. If there's any feeding damage, any recent breaks, any old breaks, and then the colors, especially if larger teeth have more surface area for basically art. It's crazy how nature can produce these beautiful works of art. This is a great white. This is a $500 tooth.
Wow.
My girlfriend found that. Perfect condition, beautiful colors.
Wow.
Everything's there. Great whites are considered more rare in Florida.
This is a modern...
No.
Like, it's similar to the modern great white?
Yeah,
but
very
obviously,
close.
Obviously, it's very, very old. But the great whites haven't really evolved that much over the years, right?
Yeah,
over
they're the a little bit younger.
Okay.
That's this
amazing.
Is from a younger layer.
So is a modern great white, how big would its tooth be?
So generally speaking, every inch of shark tooth is 10 feet of shark.
Okay.
Generally.
Okay.
So this
so
is
that
about
could be a modern day.
Yes, that's about the size of a large great white tooth in modern day. Okay. And I'm sure back then.
Wow.
So yeah, that's how big their teeth are. They're a lot sharper when they're in the mouth, but this is preserved beautifully. Especially with their bite force and having hundreds of these close down on you.
Oh, wow.
Game over.
I mean, yeah, where I work in the Channel Islands National Park, we have elephant seals. They get thousands of pounds.
Wow.
You know, they're bigger than your kayak. And,
I didn't know that.
And
elephant
that's what the white sharks hunt out there. That's their primary
food.
Like, you'll see a 200-pound seal, a different species, and the white sharks don't care about that. It's only 200 pounds. They're looking for elephant seals that are 2,000-3,000 pounds. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
So,
I didn't know they got that big.
Yeah, and you look at this tooth and you're like, yeah, that could get through the hide of a 3,000-pound seal, you know.
Wow.
That's what they're evolved for. That's what they've been designed for.
That's true.
Wow.
And then the megalodons, they hunted whales.
Yeah.
And other sharks.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, like what would you, can you imagine like being in the ocean with a megalodon? Like,
no.
I probably wouldn't be super afraid because it's not really going to
probably wouldn't be too concerned about you. But that would be just being in the presence of the largest predator to ever roam the earth. There's got to be tons of fear involved for anyone.
Oh, man.
That's what, just yeah. crazy.
Can only imagine.
Let me show you my huge one, too, that made the news on Newsweek and Inside Edition.
Oh, no way.
This is the one that really blew up. I found it 2 months after I got bit, and it's such a rare size for Florida, or rare size in general. It's 6 inches on the dot.
Oh, my God.
And it was just...
Are you kidding me?
Huge.
That's not even real.
That's a megalodon.
You're messing with me right now. Getting to hold one of the largest fossilized megalodon shark teeth that was ever found in Florida was absolutely amazing. It was incredibly 6 inches long. If this tooth went through your leg, it would show up on both sides. Using the 1 inch of tooth equals 10 feet of shark equation, we can assume that this megalodon was in the range of 60 feet long, or a little over 18 meters. Jeffrey told me that even if someone offered him $1 million for this specific tooth, he would never sell it. I'll send out some photos of the redemption tooth and more of Jeffrey to everyone on the email list. If you are not already, go to theteethpod.com and sign up. It's free and the best way to be in the loop of any bonus material I release for each episode. The scientific name for the American alligator is Alligator mississippiensis. Due to years of overhunting, poaching, and habitat loss, in 1967, alligators were placed on the endangered species list in the U.S. Since then, they have made a roaring comeback and are now listed as a species of least concern in regards to going extinct. It's estimated there are now over 1 million alligators in Florida alone. Alligators are still federally protected, but individual states are allowed to make their own laws on harvesting gators with the proper permits and licenses.
Welcome back. A gator chomps down on a Florida man's...
Going back in time before Jeffrey was diving for fossilized shark teeth, and years before the alligator attack, his friend Steel Rocket offered him a job in the Florida Keys, working on his commercial spearfishing boat. If you listen to episode 5, you may recognize that name because Steel Rocket was on the boat when Jason Tiller was attacked by a massive bull shark 100 feet under the surface of the ocean, way out in the Gulf of Mexico. If you haven't listened to that episode, be sure to check it out. Working on Steel Rocket's commercial spearfishing boat in the Florida Keys gave Jeffrey the opportunity to scuba and freedive on a regular basis. It didn't take long for him to become pretty comfortable under the water, not to mention the actual spearfishing. Jeffrey discovered that spearfishing is healthier for the oceans than rod and reel and net fishing for multiple reasons.
The way we fish is important because bycatch is, you know, preventable. Especially with spearfishing, you get to choose that, you know what, that fish is too small, that fish is not the right species, that fish is endangered, but okay, that fish looks big enough and it's the right fish that I'm allowed to keep, allowed to kill, I'm going to take that one. So that's how fishing originally was supposed to be, was with a spear. Even if you're doing rod and reel, you have to use bait, you have to use line, and there's a huge problem with you know, microplastics and monofilament and all the line. I still, of course, support rod and reel fishing. I love it myself. But like the netting and the trolling in some of the places in other countries as well that just have high bycatch rates.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way. And spearfishing, I think, is an outlet and an alternative to take us back to our roots and fish the way I think we were supposed to.
Working on the fishing boat also gave Jeffrey the opportunity to be in the water with sharks, big sharks, bull and hammerheads that were big enough to take out a full-grown man if they wanted to, but they just generally don't. These experiences with sharks were very inspiring and just made Jeffrey love the ocean's apex predators even more. In June 2021, a week after the alligator attack, recreational and professional divers had been searching the Mayaca River for Jeffrey's lost GoPro. It was attached to his mask when he got attacked by the alligator a week previous, but got knocked off. The GoPro would hopefully be able to tell the story of what really happened in that river. But after a week, it was looking unlikely to be recovered.
Every day that went by was just another day like they haven't found the GoPro.
Going back in time, years before the attack, Jeffrey got the opportunity of putting his diving skills to use, doing something he instantly loved even more than fishing.
I first went looking for shark teeth in 2017 with a Shark Week producer by the name of Mark Rackley. I went with him and his family up to South Carolina. We dove some blackwater rivers, which was pretty nerve-wracking in the beginning, but we found some megalodons and I just got hooked. I knew going into it I was going to be really excited to find some teeth, and then when I did, I was like, this is incredible.
You can't really replace that feeling with anything else.
No, never. And then when I found out that Tampa is an hour and a half away from the Sharktooth Cup of the World, I was like, I can't believe this. And I started driving an hour and a half every weekend or every opportunity just to sift and find a couple small teeth. And then just doing that every single week, almost. I just got a little bit better at it every time, and it started leading me different areas and better areas and meeting people who knew more. And I just started getting better at it, finding better teeth, putting time into it.
I imagine that it's there's a lot of skill involved, and then there's also more luck involved.
Both. Mostly luck. Like, I took my girlfriend out her first time looking for shark teeth. It took me 2 years to find my first megalodon. She found it on her first day. Just immediately, I was like, I can't believe that. But yeah, with all the, I guess, knowledge I've developed and, you know, hours and days and weeks and months and years looking for them, it can still be, it's all about luck. Are you on the right spot? Like, even if you're not, there can still be a shark tooth in a very unusual area. You know, people find them in their yards sometimes in the right area.
I don't know much about it. Like, what are you finding? You're not finding the actual material of the shark tooth.
Right. So it's a fossil. It's usually comprised of phosphate over here. It's legally and chemically a rock, just like most fossils, all fossils. But yeah, and what's kind of cool is they're like a snowflake. So a lot of them have feeding damage from the shark's own mouth, from, you know, what it's eating. And then over the millions of years, they're all dated from anywhere between, at least megalodons are anywhere between 2 million and 23 million years old, give or take. So a lot can happen in that amount of time. But we're lucky that the teeth can be very well preserved. And can be pretty common if you get in the right area. So the spot's very important. I'm just very thankful on how well they can be preserved. Not much else of the shark can be preserved.
And the reason for that is the teeth is a more, like, while the animal is alive, the teeth is a more solid substance than the cartilage.
Right, it's very hard, very strong and sturdy. Yeah, so they can preserve well.
The fossilized is better.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
I agree.
Since the entire state of Florida is so close to sea level, it has fluctuated from above and below the ocean over the ages. For instance, there are lots of megalodon and other shark teeth that can be found in what is now dry land, but used to be the bottom of the ocean. The opposite is also true, and you can find human artifacts and even fossilized mammoth bones on the bottom of the ocean surrounding Florida that used to be dry land, making Florida and the ocean surrounding it a fossil hunter's paradise.
For me, something that fascinates me is like seeing all these different layers. Like, we're just another layer. Blink of time compared to all these things. Like, the megalodon layer is only a couple inches.
Wow. Puts things in perspective.
Big time. We're just a blink.
And then you get into this river in South Carolina, which has visibility of what?
Black. You need like several lights. You need a light. And in this river where I started, I basically had my nose on the bottom with a light right next to my head.
So we're talking less than a foot. Like, without a light, you can't see anything.
Oh, yeah. Less than a foot with a light. So
wow.
that river was pretty dark, and the river where I got bit is very similar.
You're literally like bumping into rocks and logs and stuff. Like,
yes.
You're not seeing things. You're feeling it more than seeing it, probably.
Both.
Okay.
You definitely have to be able to see the shark teeth well. But I haven't done this yet, but I know of people that will do just that. They can't see anything, so they have to feel around. To me, that's not efficient enough. I don't want to be doing that. It's just, I want to be able to see.
Things that you can bump into in a murky river include rusty fish hooks, lures, broken glass, nails. There are also an assortment of animals that you probably don't want to bump into in that black water. Other than alligators, there are water moccasins, catfish, and giant alligator snapping turtles.
Those can take your hand off, and they can really do some damage.
Yeah, they look like dinosaurs.
They are. They are.
Literally.
All reptiles. Yeah. Those are scary. I never want to come across one of those.
And the Mayaka is like brackish or freshwater where you were?
Both, yeah.
Where you were?
It was fresh. Okay. There's bull sharks up there too. There's a guy at the place where I got bit who caught 9 bull sharks in one day from that same spot.
Wow. Fishing?
Fishing.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
The day of the attack, Jeffrey went in the Mayaka solo for the first time. He was also going right from the shore, free diving the river for the first time, which means no scuba gear. You get in the water, you have a weight belt, a mask, a GoPro on your mask, mm-hmm. maybe some gloves. Like, what are you wearing?
Gloves, a wetsuit.
Wetsuit, okay.
I have the wetsuit in my car. It's got a bunch of crazy teeth marks and
cool.
some blood on it.
Wow. What? How thick of a wetsuit do you use down here?
3 mil. For that time of year, the water was warm. I could have done it just skin, but obviously I like the protection, not get scratched up as much with the rocks.
Yeah. How deep was it right there?
Like 5 feet.
You've seen alligators while looking for teeth before.
Oh, yeah. I knew the dangers going in. I knew there's gators there. I dove that river several times before. It's not something that... I just treated it like a shark, I think is another mistake I made. I just went in with the attitude of, you know, if you don't mess with them and you don't act like prey and you don't thrash around, you probably won't get bit. Obviously, the danger is always there, but... that is not always the case, especially they're two completely different animals. Gators can't see as well, especially in murky water. I think sharks can sense their surroundings a lot better.
Yeah, the electromagnetic pulses.
Yep. So gators can kind of just, you know, feel around and just, especially during mating season, there's a lot of aggression out there. And this was a female that the trappers said was most likely protecting something. So it was very aggressive, and I think it was a perfect storm for a major accident like that. So a lot of the mistakes I made led up to that point as well.
So when you see an alligator in the water, just on a general dive or general looking for teeth, you'll be aware of where it is. You'll be aware that they're there, but you're playing it cool and you're not causing a commotion, and you just let them do their thing. They'll let you do your thing.
That was my mindset going into it. Obviously I'm no expert on them, and several gator experts did make videos on what I did wrong, and I completely understand. And I'm still not any expert by any means. I just know what it feels like to get bit.
Yeah.
but back then I was definitely way too cocky and comfortable. You know, we're in their environment still, and anything can happen, no matter how much you know, no matter how much you think you know.
Yeah.
Every day can be different, especially during that time of year. It's very dangerous. During mating season, there's a lot of violence that goes on in those rivers, lakes, anywhere where gators are.
In Florida, when alligators reach a length of about 6 feet, they become sexually mature. During breeding season, alligators court by taking part in an assortment of bizarre activities. The male creates a sad and deep moan to let everyone know he's lonely. This moan makes the alligator the loudest reptile on Earth at 90 decibels, which is about the volume of an average lawnmower. If this loud moan works and attracts a female, they will then try to drown each other while mud wrestling. They aren't actually trying to drown each other to death, just enough to know who is actually more powerful. This match can take hours. If the female is able to keep the male underwater, she will not breed with him. But if the male is able to keep the female under the surface, game on. Female alligators will only breed with a gator stronger than herself. After the hours-long match, they must be tired because the actual deed only lasts about 30 seconds. Other than the courting, there is a lot of other aggressive gator behavior going on in the late spring. Mothers protecting last year's babies from bigger gators, male gators being competitive toward each other, etc., etc. Over the winter of 2020 and 2021, Jeffrey had found a lot of great shark teeth scuba diving the Myakka River multiple times with his mentor, Mark Rackley.
You know, I did everything we could to get in there. We didn't know much. He researched a bunch of stuff, and we kind of narrowed it down to that spot, and it worked out. And he has a lot of experience with gators. Okay. He filmed for Gator Boys. He's an extreme cameraman. He's filmed a lot of great whites. He's rode great white sharks free diving. He's done a lot in his life, so I just went under his direction to, you know, me just being a guy from Georgia, I don't know much. He just taught me everything I know. If he's comfortable, I'm comfortable. So I was very comfortable in that river, too comfortable. The day before, I didn't find any teeth. I went all day trying to find different spots, and I was really frustrated. I was like, you know what? I just got to find some teeth. I got to go in there, and I've found teeth here before. I'm going to do it again. And that kind of desperation is what led me to do something a little bit more extreme that day.
That day is the day of the attack. In our timeline of events leading up to the attack, we are now at the day of the attack. But in order to really get the correct context, we first need to talk about what happened 2 weeks after the attack. A lot of divers and fossil hunters, some that were Jeff's friends, were now searching for a much more modern treasure in the murky Myakka River, Jeffrey's GoPro. Jeffrey's GoPro would hopefully have the footage of him being attacked. I personally went to the Myakka River where Jeffrey was attacked after interviewing him. It's right next to the Snookhaven restaurant on the Myakka River, and I can confirm that that water is very, very dark. And they say black water. They call it black water for a reason. Another thing that surprised me was there was actually a decent amount of current. When I think of murky water, I think of it just sitting stagnant, but there's actually a decent amount of current. So when you put those two elements together and add in that there are alligators that are attacking people in that river, it's pretty challenging to find anything.
After 2 weeks, I was like, man, I don't think it's going to come out.
The reason he really wanted the GoPro footage to be found was because it would hopefully prove that he did not provoke the attack and could maybe be free from the negative press and death wishes. So after 2 weeks, you had given up on them recovering the GoPros. You figured it was pretty unlikely at that point.
Yeah, I thought it was gone forever. But then I got a call from NBC.
NBC2 anchor Brenna White made this happen. She actually tracked down an underwater drone team to go hunting for the camera that was lost in the attack.
An underwater drone is essentially a remote-controlled underwater submarine. The drone has a camera attached to it so the operators can see what's going on and control the drone arm.
So it looks like we've got maybe a foot or 2 feet of visibility. Looks like you're in a good spot there, Chase. Maybe even more, a little bit in towards shore, if you can. We're getting to the right place here.
Less than an hour into our search, FlyMotion found a snorkel.
I cannot believe that.
And as their drone breached the surface...
It's got a GoPro on it.
Oh, my God!
Yeah,
Yes.
I FaceTime Jeffrey to share the good news.
Found your GoPro.
No way.
This is the guy that found it.
Hey, buddy.
Wow, you are really good at your job. Good job, guys. Thank you so much. I really, really hope I was filming.
Hold on. You're telling me after all of that, you don't even know if you were filming? No, in all seriousness, the GoPro was on his head, so he couldn't be 100% sure that it was recording. He hit the record button, but if you accidentally hit the record button twice, it will stop recording. So nobody knew for sure if the found GoPro would actually have the footage of the alligator attack. Although Jeffrey was excited to get the news that NBC and FlyMotion had recovered his camera, at this point, he had become a lot more careful with the media after learning firsthand that his well-being is not always going to be prioritized over ratings.
I was like, well, can I see it? And they're like, well, no, we put an embargo on it, so we can't, because it's really good footage or whatever, you can see it. I was like,
what is that?
Oh,
what
okay.
does an embargo mean?
It means it can't. They don't want it to be released and leaked, because whoever puts it out first has the most power control. I didn't know that. So I'm speaking to lawyers. I'm talking to people.
NBC told Jeffrey that after he gave them permission to air it, he could see the footage of his attack with the rest of the world, but not before.
It concerned my family and a lot of my friends that they wouldn't let me see it because they didn't want it to get leaked. They were like, well, you own the video. You're the one who got attacked. You need to decide what happens with your property. I was like, okay, I guess that makes sense.
One of the friends that provided a lot of support in this ordeal was Jackson Tinney of the YouTube channel Juke Squad.
Leave it to the news to find it. It's like the one good thing they've ever done. Huh? Yeah, let's go get your GoPro back.
Even though Jackson had never met Jeffrey in real life, he drove from Miami to Fort Myers to try to attempt to get the GoPro from NBC's physical headquarters. Jackson had more experience than Jeffrey with dealing with the media, and they were ready to physically and or legally pry the GoPro from NBC if necessary. When they got there, they were pleasantly surprised.
You waiting on this?
Yes.
All right, here you are.
Do you ever think you'd see that again?
What? That's crazy. Oh my God.
They just gave it to me.
And they didn't insist on being the first to release it.
Well, they still did, but it was my property. They can't legally.
Minutes later, Jackson, Jeffrey, and a few others huddled around and pulled out the memory card of the GoPro, put it into a computer, and everyone took a deep breath. There's a video file of Jeffrey on the bank of the Miyaka River putting on his fins minutes before the attack. The GoPro was recording. Jeffrey hit play, then hit pause, took a few really deep breaths, hit play again, and then immediately paused it again.
It was very intense. It was a lot more intense than I anticipated because I have a panic attack as I'm watching it. I can't watch it. I say, Jack, you have to watch it first, man.
Wow.
With no volume. And there's a video of me just watching it having a panic attack. It's crazy, man.
It just brought it all back.
Oh my gosh, I felt everything again.
Jeffrey allowed us to use the actual GoPro footage, so that is what you're hearing now.
I see a couple kayakers go by and they're like, oh, what are you looking for in here? I was like,
shark teeth.
There's shark teeth in here?
Yep. Oh yeah, there's a bunch of them.
I said, are you not afraid of gators? I shook my head no. And they go by, I get in the water. Just too comfortable. And then I come up a couple times, I dive right down in the middle. I'm like, okay, this is sand. Let me go towards the bank. I go towards the bank, trying to find that gravel, which is where the teeth are. Yeah, I just bobbed up a couple times, and I thought I was at the top of the water because, you know, that would make sense. It probably thought I was a turtle or just something of its prey because the gators can only see what's on the top. They can't see what's under. So they only think you're as big as your head. And then when I finally saw the footage for the first time, I was like, I was underwater. It probably thought I was a gator.
The alligator bit Jeffrey's head and held on for a little over 6 seconds. And we know that because of the GoPro footage. We're going to play the audio from that now. Content warning, it's just audio, but it's still pretty violent.
I felt just a pull. Huge pull. I thought it was a boat. I didn't hear anything coming. I thought I got slammed by a big boat. Like it just tore me down, like completely pulled me down. It felt like I got hit, not bit. I feel my head get pulled like that, and then my hand as well. So my head got pulled down to the side a little bit. My hand got pulled. And I look up. And I'm like, where's this boat? Where did it come from? I touched the side of my head. I lost hearing in my left ear. So I feel my head and I feel my, what I now know is a flap of my scalp, because I got scalped and my skull was visible apparently, according to the people who saw me. But I feel my hair sideways. And I'm like, that's not good. And I see blood all over my hand.
There was no sight or sound of any boat at the surface because it wasn't a boat. It was an alligator. And she wasn't finished. The alligator was now at the surface, staring right at Jeffrey.
And I see her just looking at me. We look at each other. I think we were both confused. And I look at her again. And then she lunges at me a little bit, and I back up a little bit. And we're still looking at each other. And again, just from my experience with sharks, I'm not trying to thrash. I'm not trying to act like prey and move too fast.
An alligator's bite strength is over 2,000 pounds per square inch. That's more than a hippopotamus or a polar bear. Jeffrey cannot afford to have his head bit again because she will definitely kill him.
And I see her just looking at me, and we look at each other a little bit, and then she really lunges at me. I'm like, I got to get out of here. She was pretty aggressive. The second one was really intense. Oh my gosh, man, it was crazy. Sometimes I really have to go back to that moment and just the intensity of it. I need to be reminded of it and how thankful I am. Like, I go through every day just as normal now. But I really almost died in a lot of, from every angle.
It wasn't that long ago. This was like
six months ago. Yeah. But I think it's humbling and important for me to be regularly reminded of how intense that was. And how I'm not invincible. Even after that, there's some days where I feel invincible. I'm like, I just got to reel it back in sometimes. And it's really, very humbling moment. And it was just so intense.
How close were you to the shore whenever she got you?
Like 5 to 10 feet, not far. Right. This wasn't a big river at this point in the river. It was probably only like 20, 30 yards wide.
Okay. So that worked out in your favor.
Yes, certainly. There's much wider parts in the river, obviously. Everything worked in my favor. Every single thing.
So you get bit. She knocks the mask and your GoPro off your face.
Yes.
With the initial grab.
Yeah.
Because in that video, which is on YouTube, mm-hmm. It just, you don't even see her. You
never.
Don't even see the alligator. You just see everything just starts thrashing around
right.
with this insane force in
yeah,
the video.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then the mask, you kind of see that the mask falls down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not attached to the mask anymore, obviously,
right.
thankfully.
It was a miracle, man. I don't know how it didn't knock me out. It didn't twist. It didn't hold on. It didn't come back.
That's the thing that's fascinating to me in researching your story is you didn't black out. And or go unconscious.
Like, almost did.
That's kind of amazing.
Especially for being alone. If it knocked me out, I would have drowned right there. No one would have known.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if someone was there, even if there was 13 people around me, how are you going to save someone from a gator?
Yeah.
You know, that gator does what it wants.
And then you come up to the surface and you're literally staring at her. She's at the surface with you. Before you listen to part two, can you do me a huge favor and text or email this episode to a friend right now that you think would also enjoy it? That way you'll have someone to talk to about it afterwards. And if more people are listening, it allows me to make more episodes like this. I really appreciate you. In part two, find out how Jeffrey was able to barely claw his way out of death's door with an exposed skull. You'll also hear about how the alligator avoided initially being captured and what Jeffrey is up to today. The Teeth podcast music is by Davey Chedwigan and Joshua Lopez, produced by Scott Neary and myself. I'm Jeremy Carberry. Hope you make time to get outside today and enjoy the wildlife while also giving all of that wildlife the space and respect they deserve.